You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Well, I hope you all enjoyed your Thanksgiving holiday or a little small vacation. I certainly did. I caught up with my sleep, and I had to write a paper, which I spent most of the 4 days writing. It's more or less complete. I'm typing it right now. Today will probably be a shorter show because, like I said, I've been kind of focused in on completing that paper, typing it up so I can read it tonight and then make some changes and polish it. But I was listening to the radio during the break, the Thanksgiving break, and what struck me is Obamacare is continually in the news. And I listen to a lot of talk radio as well as regular news shows, and over again you hear nothing about, it's just Obamacare, 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 and a lot of the call-ins, and you got to be careful, because people who call in this talk shows are only a small percentage of the total audience. But even discounting that, the big complaint, and I've been saying this on the show over and over again, is the dramatic increase in premiums for comparable plans. And that is the big problem, because people are getting what I call sticker shock in terms of the monthly premiums, and many people simply cannot afford the premiums. And even those that have so-called subsidies can't afford the premium. And then, and what's happening is people are recognizing what I did when I much earlier, and I've said it on many shows. It's not just the monthly premiums that are so much higher; it's the deductible. And the conclusion I'm coming to: there is a lot of upset people out there, and it's getting worse. It's going to get a lot worse because what's starting to happen right now is the small business owners are getting their renewal letters. I used to be in the business, so I know how this works. Every year, your group health insurance, it doesn't matter whether you're a large or small company, if you have it with an insurance company, you get an annual renewal letter. It usually comes 30 to 60 days before your anniversary date, sometime in that window. And usually, most people are expecting, anywhere from a 3 to 5 to maybe 10% rate increase. It really depends on the business and their experience, but that's sort of the normal range, if you will. And when I was in the business, if it went above that, I knew I had to be shopping it for them, looking for alternative plans or a way to change the existing plan, which to get the premiums down back in line, which usually meant a higher deductible. When I was in the business, we were talking deductibles of $100, $250, $500, $750, or $1,000. Those were and it depended on the company, and most people had, I would say, some had $100 deductible, some had $250, $500. Occasionally, you'd have $1,000. And when a renewal came in and it was over 10%, many times I would lose out because there are other people in the business knocking on the doors, and if they had lower premiums, they'd get the business. And that's something that I don't think the White House really understands. People are really, when it comes to health insurance, affordability is a key issue, and they're very, very sensitive to premium increase. So when you're getting increases of 25, 50, 75, 100% or more, that drives them nuts. And the line the administration uses, well, these are better plans, misses the point. It could be a great plan. It's like a car. It could be a great car, but if I can't afford it, I'm not going to buy it. And I don't really think that's really sunk in. I was listening to some defenders of Obamacare on the radio just before the show, and two things struck me. One is they're lying about it. So they got their shills that go out there and literally lie. And the reason why it won't work is people know they're lying. They know it if they have individual coverage. They know it if they've been listening to the people that have been calling in. And they certainly know it if they're working for employers. And my fear is more and more employers, a good percentage, I don't think all of them, but I would say at least 10%, maybe more, are going to simply say, go to the exchanges. We're out of this game. If you want coverage, spend your own money and go to the exchange. And then what's going to happen is the people that were on very, very good plans with their employer will go to the exchanges and get the shock of their life, not only in terms of the monthly premium, which will be much, much higher, but also in the deductible. Because typically most people are looking at 20, depending on whether they buy the bronze, the silver, or the gold, looking at deductibles in the 2,500 to 3,500 range, and that's per person. So if you have a husband and wife, let's say it's $3,000, that's $6,000 for a husband and wife. Let's say they're injured in an automobile accident. So this is going to get worse and worse and worse. There is, and that's the reality. See, the big date was Saturday. By the 30th November, which was Saturday, the website will be better. Of course, it was so bad, it had to be better. But that doesn't really address people's concerns with, you know, my biggest concern and why I would stay off of it is simply I don't want my identity stolen, number one. And two, if you look at the disclosures on it, anything you provide, they have freedom to disclose it whoever they want to. Well, that's unacceptable. So for privacy reasons as well as security reasons in terms of identity, you don't want to get health insurance and as a result your identity is stolen and people are using your name to take out loans, to take out credit cards, to buy merchandise, and then you suddenly get bills in the mail. And you say, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have a credit card. What are you talking about? So the Obamacare is a disaster that isn't going to get any better. I've already said on previous shows, assume that the website problems are totally corrected. They finally get their act together, and I think it'll take them at least 6 months to a year, and that's being very optimistic. On a complex site like this, it's probably going to be a year because it really needs to be tested. For security alone is the, you know, my biggest concern. And what I'm hearing more and more reports, again, it's anecdotal, it's people calling in, is the fact that they think they've signed up for Obamacare. And when they contact the insurance company, and the insurance company says either we never got your information or it was incomplete and you don't have coverage. You know, this is a mess that's getting worse, not better. And what that means is a couple of people talking about. And it's really dawning on people that the big negative of Obamacare is not in and of itself the health insurance. It's the impact it's having on employment. Because if you're an employer, especially a small business owner, and by small I mean under 50 employees, every penny counts. And where you have, in a 1 year period, namely this year, you get a premium renewal notice, a renewal, your policy's up for renewal, here's what it will cost you if you want to continue, and now you're getting sort of a double whammy. Not only you're getting your regular increase that you would normally have gotten, but now you can't keep your plan. So your existing plan, which most people are happy with, is out the window. And now you have to buy a more expensive plan. They say, well, it's qualified, it's approved, and it has a lot of stuff people don't want. Now, the group market's a little different. It will have more of what Obamacare adds. So there, even though there'll be differences, the big increase in premium will not be as large as you're seeing in the individual market. That doesn't surprise me. Because when you're buying a group health insurance, you're buying it more than just for yourself, but you're not buying it just for yourself if you're a business owner. You're buying it for your employees. So let's say I don't really care about maternity, but I have people working for me that are young. They're concerned about maternity, and they're concerned about the coverage for their children, because that's one of the other drivers. People need this coverage for their children, especially if the children have serious medical problems or chronic medical problems. And that gets them upset. It's not only their personal situation, but is the fact that, one, they can't afford it. It's a lot more expensive. There'll be more out of pocket. And some people are saying, even with subsidies, I can't afford it. This is just too much money. So even though there was some good news, they try to say, well, the website's getting better. Night and day from what it was 60 days ago. I would hope so, because it was a rather disaster. And Apparently what they focused on was how many people could actually simultaneously log on. And they're shooting for 60,000. They're supposedly at 50,000. Well, I forget the exact number, but it was in the hundreds of thousands transactions that Amazon gets every hour. So why 50,000 sounds like a lot, it really isn't. And that simply amazes me. I don't know what the right number is, but I think it's north of 100,000. And there's always going to be on any site, including healthcare.gov, a period of time when people are, for example, sleeping. So yeah, you can get on in the middle of night and it might be the traffic will be very low, but that's not what most people want to do. They want to log in when it's convenient for them. You see, if the government can't handle this, you think it's going to get any better? I don't. And what I think is going, and I hope gets more attention, is the employment impact. Now, we have a lot of economic news is going to come out this week. And what I mean by that is you're going to have the monthly unemployment report Friday, which I'll definitely cover, as well as you're going to have the GDP numbers, revised GDP numbers for the third quarter. And those will be important numbers to see whether or not the economy is truly slowing down. The news I was hearing over the weekend, and again, this is anecdotal, is business was good. And I can testify to that. I don't do much shopping, but I can get a free calendar which gives me coupons if I go to Half Price Books, which I did. And they had a special sale Thursday, which I took advantage of. I try to buy only books that cost $1 or $3, and I would say about 95% of the books I buy fall in that category. So I can get a number of books and get a calendar, and then the coupons enable me through the year. And I don't go there but maybe once a week if I go once a week. It's usually maybe once a month. But if I do, I have a coupon, and I have now enough calendars, enough coupons, that saves me money. But again, I try to buy the cheapest books, and I usually, if you're willing to wait, I'm no hurry. Fiction, I never buy fiction books. Fiction books have to be a buck or I don't buy it. So I'm giving a plug to Half Price Books, but it was crowded during that Black Friday, the big right after Thanksgiving. I can attest to that. The parking lots were full, the store was full, and the lines were very, as a matter of fact, I would say the longest line to check out I've ever seen was in the afternoon. And many people took advantage of the sale. You could either get 40% off on an item, or if you bought $50 a book, you get 15% off, which translates into a 30% discount. So a lot of people were there buying books. I was there, but I was buying the cheap ones. But I saved a bunch of money. And I will save a bunch of money in the future because I have a calendar that has the coupons in the back. The way it works is you get for every 2 month period, you get a coupon for every 2 months. So if you have two calendars, you can get a coupon for, and I do have more than two calendars. I get a coupon for, I'm not trying to confuse it, I'm not trying to plug this. You get, for every calendar you have, you get a coupon that covers a 2 month period, and that covers you through October. That's how it works. There are no coupons in through October, no coupons in November or December. So if you spend, I think the number, you gotta buy $30 worth of books. If you buy $30 worth of books, you get a calendar. So to take advantage of it, you better hurry up because those calendars are going quickly. They'll probably run out of the calendars in the next week or two, if not sooner. And I only plug it because I do have to buy some books. And if you do, a cheap place to go, inexpensive, nice store, one of the largest bookstores I've seen in the United States. It probably is the largest bookstore in the United States. They have a lot, and they really are pushing the clearance where you can buy a book for either $1 or $3. And if you're patient, you can get a lot of those books for a dollar each. So you get a number of books, and if you buy $30 worth, if you buy, let's say, a $3 book, 10 of them, that's $30. You get a calendar, and then you get coupons. So that's my plug for Half Price Books. I've been a regular customer because I'm a reader and I needed some books to write this paper. And I was very fortunate to find actually three, that were terrific for writing this paper, and I'm using it, and I'm citing it in this paper. And I'm writing about the ultimate resource, and the ultimate resource is human beings. And it's a play on the fact Reverend Thomas Robert Malthus said the last resource of nature was famine. If war didn't get you, if plague didn't get you, if epidemics and disease didn't get you, famine would. Well, Robert Malthus was wrong, because what's happened is, I'm not saying we don't have famines. Occasionally you do, but it's not because of inadequate food production. It's usually because of government intervention into the economy. And the two largest famines I can think of were Stalin's in the Ukraine, and now with his great leap forward, where millions, and that over 30 to 40 million Chinese were killed. That was the problem with government intervention into the economy. The problem was not food. The problem was what the government was doing resulted in people starving to death. And that's seldom talked about or even mentioned. The problem the communist Chinese have is Mao. He's responsible for the deaths of millions, tens of millions of Chinese. And Stalin is the same problem, but in the Ukraine. You see, governments kill people. It's called democide, death by government. And that's been the big killer, whether it's in wars or government actions that cause famines or plagues or epidemics, or sending you to concentration camps, gulags, prisons. It's government that's the big killer. It is not capitalism. Because what has virtually eliminated famines is the Green Revolution. And the reason why I mention it is because of that, we don't have famines in China or India or any other country, because what that consisted of was a number of technologies being combined to dramatically increase the yield per acre or per hectare of our, really, the cereal staples. Rice, corn or maize, wheat were the three top ones. And we literally had a green revolution in the 60s that resulted in elimination of famine as really a factor. But it wasn't just breeding or getting high yield seeds. That was very, very important. And seeds or plants that were resistant to various plant diseases, you need that resistance. And that requires a lot of experimentation, trial and error. But when you combine that with irrigation, water supplies, fertilizers, better farm management, all of it resulted in the more than doubling of the yield. And as a result, famine has more or less been eliminated. The only real area today that's a problem is Africa, and it's really sub-Sahara Africa. It's not that everything, everywhere, every place is hunky-dory, but what has happened over the last 100 years is tremendous drops in the infant mortality rate, over 50%. And that's due to a number of things, but one is rising standard of living as a result of the economy being expanded has resulted in better food, better housing, better clothing, as well as better sewer systems, water supply. All of it together works together to do a number of things, but the big one is to lower infant mortality, which was, whether it was in the developed or the developing countries, is dramatically declined. And as a result, the life expectancy of the world population has more than doubled in the last 100 years. That's the good news. There's a lot of good news out there. But the bigger problem is the government. The big killer has been the government and the government's agents. And what we're seeing in Obamacare, I view it as the collectivization of the healthcare industry. I don't think it's good. I will strive to do anything to repeal Obamacare now. Repeal Obamacare today. I call it rot. Repeal Obamacare today. And I hope it happens in the next year. I'm looking at the time. I still have about 30 minutes. I'm going to make this show short, and it's sort of a random show. I usually focus on one or maybe two issues at most, but it's really somewhat of my random thoughts, what happened over the Thanksgiving weekend. And what I was obviously reading about was what has happened to the world in terms of population growth over that 100 year period. In 1900, just so to nail this down, the population of the world was about 1.5 billion. And the life expectancy was about 30 years. Now, it's going to be higher in the United States, but it was still in the 40s in the United States. Today, and really within the last 50 years, the world population today is over 7 billion. So that's 7 billion people. It's a lot of people. However, the life expectancy today, and this is world, it's obviously higher in the United States, is over 67 years. In other words, we've had more than a doubling of the life expectancy in 100 years. That's phenomenal. And the major driver of that was lower infant mortality. And the reason you have lower infant mortality, one is you rarely have famine. You still are going to have people that are going hungry every day or malnourished. And like I said, doesn't mean there's not room for improvement, because it definitely is. But if you look at the big picture, there have been dramatic improvements in life expectancy alone, in drops in infant mortality, and a rising, dramatically rising standard of living. You see, you need more people. And this is sort of the paradox. The more people you have in a country, it enables individuals to specialize. At one time in the United States, about 80 to 90% of all the people were farmers. They worked on the farm. Now, yes, there were some merchants and attorneys and ministers, but we were a nation of either farmers or shepherds, whether it's sheep or cattle. We were initially very much an agricultural nation, as was the rest of the world. You know, the world has gone through three stages. The first stage was the hunter-gatherers, and that was for millions of years. And the population of the world was much, much smaller, and everyone had to do that. And the life expectancy then was in the 20s, with much, much higher infant mortality rate. But within the last 100 years, and what happened was, starting about 400 years ago, we've had a gradual improvement in the standards of living of people throughout the world. It's been gradual, but as a result, we've had an increase in population, which enables more and more specialization, which is what you want. So not everyone is, today in the United States, about 2% of our workforce is involved in agriculture. And there's a little bit more if you, depending on how you define the agricultural sector. At one time, it was over 80%. 90%. So in the space of a little over 225 years, look what's happened. We went from an agricultural society to a highly industrialized society. So you need more people to specialize and to increase your standard of living, and that has happened. Not overnight. It's a combination of more people and time. That is what has risen, or that is what's caused the rise across the world, but also in the United States, of higher and higher standards of living. Now, it has slowed down recently. I'll be the first one to say that. But one of the big drivers was more people. And if you're going to have more people, you obviously need more food. But because of specialization, you need fewer and fewer people to produce more and more crops, whether it's in the United States, China, India, you name the country. That's what's happened. A lot of that has been in the last 50 years. The Green Revolution is still going on. It's making investments in technology, such as better irrigation systems, better farming techniques, and the use of fertilizer. All have resulted in much, much higher yields that can go to feed people. But you need fewer people to produce these agricultural crops, whether it's wheat, corn, rice, and all the other crops. And that's good. That's the benefit of an expanding free market economy. And it didn't require the government to do that. And the entire world has benefited in terms of lower infant mortality rates, longer life expectancies, higher standards of living, which means better food, better clothing, better housing, not only for people in developed countries, but also in the developing or emerging nations. and it needs to be continued and is going to be continued despite the efforts of the collectivist to butt into your business. I was looking at the news, and I didn't have time. For the 4 days, I primarily read. If I wasn't shopping for groceries, actually, I tried to get a haircut. My barber wasn't there. I really need a haircut. Probably get it tomorrow. And I made a special trip to get a haircut, and the barber had left. And I asked for another barber, and they said, well, he has about 4 people. I said, I'll come back next time. It's valuable. So I went shopping for groceries, did not get my haircut, listening to the radio, and I hear about this train wreck in New York. I used to live in the Bronx and commute down to Manhattan almost every day. Because I originally went to New York University, had a campus. They no longer have it at University Heights, where the Hall of Fame of Great Americans is. It was a nice campus, but it was somewhat cramped. And that was, initially, that was where their School of Engineering Sciences was. I transferred, originally, I was a physics major, and I decided in my freshman year I was not smart enough to be a physicist, so I transferred down to the business school in Washington Square, so I took the train at least Monday through Friday every day, and on weekends sometime. And I would take, I believe it was the D train. So I'm familiar, and there are tunnels going from the Bronx into Manhattan, and obviously the subway goes. The subway, in the Bronx, it's an elevated subway, or at least it was when I was there. I haven't been back in so long, who knows? I know they still have subways. Anyway, I would go downtown, and just as you got approaching Manhattan, you go into a tunnel. And this is what happened here. This train, there's a curve, and it supposedly was traveling at a rate of speed of 82 miles an hour, which is real fast, when the curve, really the speed for that curve, and I have pictures on my site. I need to mention this. I have a companion blog. It's prontpops.wordpress.com. That's prontpops, prontpops.wordpress.com. If you go to that site at the very top, you'll be able to listen to the most recent shows for the last 2 months, and below that I have a complete archive of all my shows. But below that, you'll get pictures, and on this train wreck, I have a lot of pictures, so you get an idea of what actually happened. 4 people were killed, 63 were injured, and that death count might have gone up because there's at least 2 people in very, very serious condition. And the train went off the rail, and the diesel engine that was pushing these trains was in the back. I assume that the operator was in front, and he claims that the brakes failed. That's why it was going at such a high speed. The National Transportation Board, Safety Transportation Board, that's investigating that, I've heard a report that they have not found that to be true, that the brakes actually worked. Who knows? A lot of this, one of the first things they try to do is pin it on the human being. It's pilot error, or operator error, or whatever they call the trainman, the operator of this train. And they do that because most of the time it is. Not all the time, but a lot of the time, a high percentage of the time, the human being responsible for driving this train, the engineer or whatever title they use, ends up being responsible. And in this case, people died, a lot of people were injured, and this is going to have a big impact until they get this cleaned up, which will require, it looks like the train was a 4 or 5, maybe 6 trains being pushed by a locomotive. They need to get all those trains out of there because people rely on this tunnel to commute. Over 500,000 people, 500,000 people, use the MTA, the Mass Transit Authority, to get to work from Westchester County and points north. So at least for a day, if not more, and I haven't gotten any updated report, I assume they're doing everything they can to expedite this. Because if this tunnel is blocked, if this tunnel is, and it is, they got to get these tracks cleared. But because otherwise, no other trains can go through, and that means hundreds of thousands of people are stuck. They're going to have to make other arrangements, and that's not easy. And parking is expensive in Manhattan. It was expensive when I was there. And that's been decades. I don't really go back. Or at least I haven't, because most of my relatives are either passed away or moved from the Manhattan area, New York City area. There's some that are still there, mostly on Long Island. They don't live in Manhattan. But mass transit for most people in New York, whether it's by bus, subway, Long Island Railroad, is critical. There were still people drive in, but it's not a pleasant experience. It's not a cheap experience because parking was expensive then. I'm sure it's even more expensive now. It's discouraged. They encourage you to take mass transit, and you're very much dependent upon that mass transit working. Now, yeah, you can take a bus, but what happens if you have 500,000 plus people that normally take the train now have to find alternative ways to get in? Well, whether that's a taxi or a mass transit bus, if you can get it, and it's going to be a number of connections, there's going to be a lot of lost work, because it's going to take you a lot of time to get in and a lot of time to get out of Manhattan. And that's the problem with mass transit. We don't have that problem in Dallas. Let me back up. Most people in Dallas, if they can afford it, drive a car. Most of Texas, including Dallas, were very much, it's either a car or a truck. Yes, we do have mass transit. We have a fairly good DART, what's called a Dallas Area Rapid Transit. And people do ride the bus, do ride DART. I have been in Dallas now more than 30 years. I have never ridden a Dallas bus. Never ridden a Dallas bus. Period. I have ridden on a few occasions the DART area rapid transit. They have kind of a light rail system. And I do that only when I have to go downtown Dallas. Very much like people in Westchester that were on this train going to downtown Manhattan. You don't want to drive there. I don't particularly want to drive there. I have driven in downtown Dallas on occasion, but I avoid it like the plague. And if I have to go downtown for a special event, I will, and it's a rather good system. You park at one of the railroad stations or the light rail stations, the DART station, and then take the DART train down to a central point in downtown. There are a number of stops. For example, I think the last time I was downtown was for a Microsoft event. This is many years ago. And it was at the Dallas Convention Center, and that is one of the stops that the train makes, is right under the Dallas Convention Center. So I've lived somewhere else at the time, but I took my car, drove about a mile, if it was that, mile, maybe mile and a half to the station, got on the DART train. It took about 20 minutes tops to get downtown, got off, went to the event. I think it was a rollout of Visual Studio and Microsoft Office. It's been several years. I'm waiting for the next event is probably early January, and that's probably the next time I will ride the DART train down, because you usually get being a developer, you can get, Microsoft is very good about supporting the developer community. And if you go to the event and attend the event, besides being fed well, both breakfast and lunch, and snacks, they usually at the end of the event give you a nice little bag with goodies in it, such as a t-shirt. But what most developers go for the event is you get some good free software, such as a copy of the latest Visual Studio or a copy of the latest Microsoft Office. So it's a win-win situation, because they need developers to be developing for their platform, and it's just a good time. But it's crowded. A lot of people, literally thousands of people, will go to those events. They don't have them but every, I would say, 3 years. But that's the only time, or the last time, I used public transportation. And that's typical. Either you have a car, in which case you don't use public transportation, or seldom, rarely do it, or you don't have a car and you have to rely upon the bus system, which feeds into the light rail system. And if there's an accident like you've had in New York, there have been accidents. People have been killed, but it's usually because of some passengers acting up and they get injured. This case, it was I don't want to jump to conclusions, but it looks like the whoever was driving this train was speeding. He was disregarding the warning, and the train went not only derailed, and I'm looking at the picture right now and encourage you to go to punkpops.wordpress.com, and I have videos, not just photos. I have a number of videos and reports on it. So while my sympathies go to the families that, think about it, they were just going downtown, probably shopping, whatever, for whatever reason, and they find out that their father or their mother or whatever died in a train wreck. It can happen. And what was somewhat fortunate, one of the trains, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, there were about 8 to 10 trains that were derailed, but the lead train almost went into the Hudson River. There's a photograph showing that. And if that train, not only that train or other trains that went in the river, you have a much higher death toll because people would have drowned. And fortunately, and I think a few of those deaths, that's exactly what happened. The passengers were thrown into the river and drowned. Because what really happens, it knocks you out or you're injured and you can't swim and you drown. Because there's a picture, I'm looking at it right now, where a number of first responders, medical people, were trying to get the injured out of the train, in that first train. So that was the story on the news this weekend. That and the fact that Obamacare's, the site is back. And you'll be noticing they no longer like to call it Obamacare. Now it's called, and this is the joke, the Affordable Care Act. That's now the... Because Obamacare identifies it with Obama, which it should be, he's very proud of it, or at least was, not anymore, they're now calling it the Affordable Care Act. Well, this is going to boomerang big time. Why? It's anything but affordable. It's anything but affordable. And really, the only success I can see so far is really twofold. One is you have poor people below the poverty line. In other words, 138% or less they earn in terms of the poverty line. They qualify for not one of these plans, but for Medicaid. You see, if you are poor, you qualify for it right now. Now, you got to sign up. And this healthcare.gov site enables a lot of people to sign up that are they're not getting insurance plans. What they're signing up for is Medicaid. And that's coverage for the poor. And the joke, unfortunately, is on them. Because so what if you qualify for Medicaid? Go try to find a good doctor or a specialist that'll take you. Good luck. I'm not saying that there's not doctors out there that will treat Medicaid. But most, the best, whether it's a doctor, general practitioner, specialist in any specialty, don't take Medicaid patients. Now, why? Are they cold-hearted people? No. It's because the reimbursement rates are way below what it costs them, a medical practice, to treat people that qualify for Medicaid. So I'm, and literally, I've lost count, but over 100,000 of the people that are so-called enrolled, yeah, they're enrolled, but they're not enrolled in an insurance plan because they can't afford it. If you're below the poverty line, you can't afford to buy insurance, even with a big subsidy. And that's the point I'm trying to make. The estimates are that approximately 15 million additional people will be signing up for Medicaid. And it looks like that might be a good number. It could even be higher. Is that a success story? No, it's not a success story. Because why are most of these people under the, you know, at or below the poverty line? They don't have a job. They can't find a job. And that is really what needs to be focused on. That's the problem that the American people today are facing. The American people, I maintain, still have a very strong work ethic. They want to work. And they want to work. They want to work in jobs that they have the skill sets for and earn good money. But we literally have had the worst economic recovery since World War II. We've had 11 recessions, and this is by far the worst. We're still below the peak employment level that the United States reached in November of 2007. That's 6 years ago. We're 3 million jobs short of that. And initially, I will agree, you can blame George Bush for the recession. But the recession ended in June of 2009. That's over 4 years ago. And now it's 4.5 years ago, going on 5 years. And we're still below. We haven't reached the previous peak in employment. That's the big scandal. And that's why Obamacare is part of the problem. Forget about the website. Forget about even the premium. Obamacare is having a significant impact on their hiring as well as firing of people across this country. Businesses simply cannot afford Obamacare. And what's going to happen is more and more people that currently have good coverage that they're satisfied with through their employer are going to be losing it. I don't know what percent that is or how many people. And remember, there's about 155 million people. I think that's a low number. I think it's more towards 160 million people that are covered by group health insurance. Group health insurance. And over the next 13 months, many of those people are going to lose their coverage through their employer, and that's usually small businesses under 50, because the small business simply cannot afford the higher premium. And what they're going to have to do is economic necessity, say, go to the exchanges. We're no longer offering health insurance for our employees. Now, companies don't want to do that, and the reason is quite simple. Companies, businesses, they compete with other businesses, other employers, for good employees. So they need good health insurance to attract good employees. And it's not just businesses. It can be schools. It can be charities. It can be churches. It can be anyone that employs people. Because the typical question when you're going through the interview process, it's usually asked by the interviewee or it's brought up by the employer, is we offer health insurance. And it's through Blue Cross, Blue Shield, whatever, Aetna, Cigna, whatever company. And if a company has a very good plan that they're proud of, they're going to tell you that. And they'll typically say, we pay for the 100% for the employee. And if you have a wife, we either pay 100% or you're going to have to pay a percentage, maybe 50%. So employee benefits, in particular, health insurance, is really used to recruit talented people to companies, businesses. And they know they have to do that because the competitors are doing it. And if they don't do it, they run the real risk of that employee at some future date, sooner rather than later, go to work for their competitors. So, you know, I'm not predicting that a high percentage of businesses or employer-provided plans are going to go away. They're going to stay. But a significant percent, I would say upwards of 10%, maybe higher, are going to, in essence, terminate their plans and tell you to go to the exchange. They may or may not give you some additional pay to do that. And the way it works is fairly simple. I'm just going to use a number. Let's say I have 50 employees and I pay monthly $300 per employee, multiply by 50, or any number you like. It's costing me money to do that. On a yearly basis at $300, that's $3,600. That adds up. Now let's say you get in the mail from your, and usually what happens is whoever their broker or insurance agent is going to call them and say, I'd like a set up a meeting to go over your plans because you'll be getting in the mail shortly your renewal letter and the premiums of now are no longer $300 because you can't keep your plan. Now you have a Obamacare plan that's going to cost you $400 or $500 or more. And I want to see what we can do. Can you live with it? Usually, If an employer is paying $300 per month per employee and it goes up $100, that's actually a 33.3% increase. That's $1,200 per employee times the number of employees. And that's what you need to do. So what some employers will probably do is say, listen, I'm going to give every employee that has worked here as of a certain date $300 more in their pay packet, and you can go buy the insurance plan that you want, but we're not going to be offering employer group health insurance anymore. Well, that is going to happen throughout the United States for the next 13 and 14 months. And a significant minority, probably somewhere between 10 and 20%, are going to do exactly what I said. 80% are going to bite the bullet and have some health insurance, but it'll invariably be a much higher deductible. They're already high, so the deductibles will be much higher, their premiums will be much higher. But what else will happen? Some employers will make full-time workers part-time, because by doing that, most employers that I'm familiar with will pay for full-time employee health insurance. Not that many will provide any coverage at all for part-timers. And by part-timers today, under 30 hours. So what many employers are doing is changing the employment status from full-time to part-time to avoid and minimize the health insurance premium impact to their bottom line. And that is going to happen every day, every month throughout the United States. You see, even if the website was working, that's not the problem. The problem is the product and the pricing of the product. It's too expensive. That, in a nutshell, is what the problem is. And when things are too expensive, what happens? People don't buy it. They'll do other things. Make other arrangements. You know, someone called in. I was listening, and this guy was in a world of hurts. He's not making much money, and he was going nuts. And you could tell. And I forget the exact numbers, but he had like a $1,000 deductible that went up to, I think it was $3,000. And now it's him and his wife, and there were health issues. He's not making enough money, and the premium's really like more than doubled. He literally said, now he wasn't crying, but he was near it, I simply can't afford it even, and he did qualify for subsidies. Even with the subsidies, I can't afford it. So the talk show host asked him, well, what are you going to do? And he says, well, I've talked to my doctors, because his wife has a medical condition, he has a medical condition, and what they suggested is pay cash. If you're willing to pay cash, we'll give you a discount. And that's fairly typical. We're talking the Dallas-Fort Worth area. If you're willing to pay cash, doctors like it because there's no paperwork. The paperwork is expensive to do. And this gentleman says, that's probably what I'm going to have to do. I can't afford this insurance even with the subsidies. And if I could, the deductibles are so high, I'm not going to get much benefit out of it. And yes, this is an anecdotal or a call in. You can't say this is representative. Because what the other side will say is, well, a lot of people are benefiting. Yes. A lot of people that are now on Medicaid are benefiting. And the people that have serious pre-existing conditions where they already know that their benefits will more than exceed any premiums they pay. That's why a lot of people with serious pre-existing conditions can't get insurance. They're a walking insurance claim. The insurance company knows no matter what the premium is, the claims will be so much higher. So they're getting a lot of those people being enrolled. Those are the early adapters, or in this case, the early enrollees, if they've actually enrolled, because I told you in the beginning what I was hearing and increasingly hearing, is people think they have coverage, think they're enrolled. And just to make sure, they call the insurance company says, you're not enrolled. What are you talking about? And they're usually calling the control. Well, where's the paperwork? We never got the information, even though they're under the distinct impression that they enrolled in a plan. and they're not. That's going to cause some major problems. Because I know what happens. You think you placed the order. You think you paid for it. You think you've given them all the information, and then you find out you haven't. That can cause serious problems. You know, you think, you know, you're happy, you're all set. You spent hours trying to get enrolled. You went enrolled. I got my insurance, even though I don't like the price, I don't like the deductibles. And then I find a couple of weeks later when I don't get the insurance policy that tells me what, you know, the information, I call up and I find out, guess what? I don't have it. They never got the information. There's going to be a lot of that. So Obamacare is definitely in the news, but other things are in the news, especially that train accident in New York City. And my heart does go out to the families of the victims, both the injured and the four or five or six people that were killed. You know, it shouldn't have happened. You would think in today's technology, you could automatically slow down that train. You don't even need human involvement. Now, I know that's now how, it's not how it works. You're always going to have an engineer or in the lead, in the front cab, driving that train and following the lights. Usually if the lights are red, you're going too fast and you got to slow down. So we're going to learn a little bit more exactly what happened. But in addition, at least 500,000 people are affected by that. Now, we'll find out, and I'll give you an update tomorrow as to that. Now, if you're in Dallas, you're wondering, well, why am I talking about this? Don't rely on government. That's a message that needs to be said. Don't rely on government. Rely upon yourself. That's why in Texas, at least, cars and trucks are real popular. Mass transit is not popular. Really, the only people that use mass transit, well, let me say this. The majority of people that use DART, they work downtown or along where that track goes. So they might live in Plano, which is a suburb, northern. Think of Plano as like Westchester. And they take the DART rail into downtown Dallas. Well, that's similar to people in Westchester taking that MTA train into Manhattan. Now, one big difference, this is heavy rail. We have light rail in Dallas, and there's a big difference. And I don't think we've had a derailment, but no major accident so far, knock on wood. But if you had a major accident, it's probably going to take a day or more to clean it up. You see, most of these DART rail trains, they're typically, two to maybe eight cars maximum. And really, the longer ones are really just during rush hour. So my sympathies do go out to the New Yorkers that were affected by this and are continue to be affected. And go to pops.wordpress.com to... What I do is I post my notes or research that I did for this segment. I was going to talk about something else. I'm not even going to mention it until tomorrow because I really hadn't felt that I had prepared enough for it. And it's somewhat related to Obamacare and what's the Catholic Church's, the bishop's reaction to this. They're not very happy. So I probably will cover that in my next show. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Prompt, the presenter of the Prompt Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening. I hope it's been somewhat informative and entertaining. And now, back to the music.